Welcome, welcome, welcome to this edition of The Lockdown with T-Cub and The Ball Hawk.
Ah, you already know.
Yes, sir. Special guest today, David Dean, the man, the myth, the legend, my mellow, my dude, my guy. What's
yo,
up, man?
Yo. Thanks for having me, fellas. Thanks for having me. It's
the prettiest D-tackle you ever meet in your life.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We keep telling him that light skin game is past him, but, you know, he's still trying to hold on. He's still like trying to hold on. That's all right. It don't make you a bad person. We won't judge, I promise. Well, not for long. Not for long, anyway.
Yeah, how he carry himself, you'd never know he playing the trenches all day. That's what we say.
For real, for real though.
I'm a real dog.
What's good with you, baby boy?
I'm great. I'm great, man. I'm great. Just grinding, man. Just grinding. Still waiting on the CFL to make this decision about the season. We'll see what happens. But in the meanwhile, I'm working on my plan, you know, after ball. Still, you know, working on my own business too right now. I got some D-line training going on, working with some kids, some high school players, some college players. So I'm just staying busy, man, just grinding, working on myself, and still working on my football craft, man.
Nice. That'll work. Well, shoot, we'll delve into a little bit about what you're doing and business-wise, because we always want to make sure we elevate and getting the word out to folks and know what you're doing so they can support, you know, and make sure that they pushing you to the next level. So we'll wrap a little bit about that in a short. But, yo, let's get into a little bit about David Dean, the player.
From
and,
the top.
Let's take it back. Green Run High School.
Gang Run.
What I said?
That's the Hold beach, up. Baby.
What area? What
Beach area Boys, man, 757, man. Oh, greatest area code there ever was.
Yeah, that's what I thought they called it. Yeah, yeah, y'all got some talent there, huh?
Got a little bit, you know, a little bit. Some of the goats, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
Word. Good stuff. So people may not even know, you started on the baseball team too.
I did, man. I played baseball from a youngin', from 6 to college, played football too, but I was a catcher, pitched a little bit, played first, played third. Yeah,
man, you Cecil Fielder, huh? You wanted to be Cecil Fielder out there, huh?
I used to drop bombs too. Come on,
man.
I was going to ask, could you hit? That was my name.
I led the beach in home runs 2 out of my 4 years. So,
Wow. Okay.
That's great coordination.
I was all-state baseball and football.
Wow. Okay, player. Okay, I stand corrected.
You the
y'all
man.
Life can do
real athlete.
All right.
Yeah, you the man, bro.
All right.
All-state in baseball, that's a huge feat, bro. That's a huge feat, right? A lot of people don't know, like, Dre Bly was nice at Western Branch when I was coming up in high school in baseball. So if you could play baseball and you could lead the area in home runs,
man.
Yeah, because hitting that little seed is a bro.
Fundamental sport, man. It ain't like you know, you can have athletic talent benefits you in baseball, but it doesn't make or break you. Like, there's a lot of not like people that play baseball that just aren't flat out athletes. You look at CC Sabathia. Dude's an alcoholic, 330-pound pitcher, but he's one of the best. He was one of the best in the games. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't have to be the greatest athlete to be a baseball player. It's just fundamental repetition, swing, you know, taking cuts every day, taking hundreds, 200, 300 to cuts, like cuts, throwing, you know, long toss, you know, hitting your spots, pitching. Like, it's just repetition. And it's not like weight room or running or any of that. I mean, like I said, that's an addition. It doesn't make you a better player, but it doesn't make or break you, really. It's more of a skill fundamental sport. So it's tough, man.
Yeah,
it's
I remember being a younger and playing baseball. So, you know, my top three were, of course, basketball, football, and baseball. But I had more prowess than the other two because I worked at them. I pitched, and I played shortstop. And was a filthy little pitcher and could hit it. But it just it didn't move fast enough for me.
I hear you.
You know what I'm saying? It was a lot of boredom, you know, and so I just kind of gravitated away from it. It did help when them big boys started dropping, running that seed down that pipe. I'm like, man, look, these dudes might hit me with this. You know, let me go elsewhere and work on some other things. Cause this ain't for me right here.
My pops played baseball up until like middle school, and then they start pumping it like, you know, 60, 70, some close to 80 miles per hour. He got hit one pitch and that was a wrap. he was done. He said, I got hit one time, and that was over for me. That was it.
That's all it takes is one.
Yes, sir.
All it takes is one. So, senior year, 65 tackles, 11 sacks, two-time first team all Tidewater, first team all branch district, and all Eastern Regional offense and defense. I didn't know about offense. Hold up. Where'd you play offense?
I was a little O-line, little guard, you know what I'm saying? I won't tackle.
He was trapping.
Pulling, get up second level linebackers. I do a couple down blocks, free up my center a little bit. You know what I'm saying? I was even fullback, too. They put me at fullback just to do a straight ISOs. I was crushing people. I used to love it, boy.
Do you feel like playing offensive line really helped you understand schemes and things a lot better as a defensive lineman?
Definitely, because it helps you, like, just based off alignments and, like, just having a feel for blocks, you kind of have a better understanding at defensive line where the ball's going. Or like, pre-snap reads, like seeing, you know, close splits, knowing, you might be getting a double team, just little details that you pick up on a lot easier, and it just becomes, just have a better feel for it because you play both sides. So definitely gave me a one up. I would say that
Makes perfect sense. Because I think, you know, Hart, would you agree? You know, deep playing DB. You know, it helped you at receiver or vice versa, because it helped you to understand. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I agree with him. I think a lot of times when young athletes specialize in one side, they kind of take away from their growth and their understanding of the game overall. Because when you playing, like you said, when you playing both sides, and him being a D lineman, going to that offensive side of the ball, understand the down blocking, understand the tandem blockers, and getting to the next level and the mindset in which how they view the defensive line. It just helps your whole palate. So, yeah, man, that's why I love when players play both sides in high school, because it gives you that better understanding of the totality of the sport versus just I understand what I do on this side.
Right. I mean, I always say every baller, you know, was truly played on both sides of the ball. So if you couldn't do that, then you might not necessarily have been official. You just might have been all right.
Yeah, because all quarterbacks I know played on defense somehow. In high school.
True that. So let me see. Ranked the 19th defensive tackle in the nation by ESPN.com, number 10th player in the state by Rivals, rated a 4-star. When it came down to bro, you know, hey, look, I run it down.
We give you your flowers, man. We're going to give you your flowers, brother. Hey, come on now.
I get some ego a little bit.
We going to give you your flowers. You got it. Yep.
It ain't pimping if you got it. Real
I hear you.
So, we appreciate the humility, though. But we're gonna give you your flowers, bro. That's what this show is about, giving you your flowers.
Yes, sir. And we're going to have jokes along the way. So, here we go.
I'm ready.
So when it came down to college, you know, what were your top schools? And who were you leaning toward initially? And what made you decide to come to UVA?
I think I wanted to stay sort of close to home, be close to my family, so my people can come see me, have the opportunity to come see me play. Also, I wanted to go somewhere where education was important. I would get a respected degree and, have a good college experience. And then I wanted to go somewhere where I'd have an opportunity to play early. And then on top of that, the recruiting process, just building a connection with some of the recruiting coaches and, you know, staff coaches, defensive coaches, like Coach West, he was huge in my recruiting process. I built the closest relationship with him. So it came down to really Virginia and Duke. I had a good relationship with the defensive line coach at Duke, Coach Hobby. He was a well-respected, great defensive line coach. And then I had a great relationship with Coach West as well. So both schools with good education, pretty close to home, And it just ended up being Virginia. I think I had a great click with the whole entire staff. Coach London was, you know, it was great. Whenever your parents sit down with Coach London, that's a wrap. Like,
right.
He's like, everybody loves Coach London, man. He's just a great dude. So, yeah, man, they sold us. And it was also a place where I thought I'd have an opportunity to play early. So Virginia was the place. And I got to learn more about the history and, you know, just how well respected the education was, and the campus was beautiful. My visits were great. So it just was an easy choice when it came down to it, really.
Hey, right, I got a quick question, Dave. So in today's climate, you see a lot of folks questioning the PWI versus HBCU. We both come from the Tidewater, and you know Hampton University is there, Norfolk State.
Norfolk State.
How was their recruiting towards you? As far as, did they send you more than a questionnaire? Did they feel like they were outmanned? Did you ever think about staying that close to home and going to one of those schools? How was the thought process back then?
They definitely, I mean, every school sends you a questionnaire. So I got the questionnaire, but I think it just came to them thinking that, you know, yeah, like you said, they're outmanned. And, you know, I think a lot of HBCUs don't think they're capable of landing certain athletes because of who they are. And, you know, they're not really respected, but it seems like that conversation is starting to change a little bit. So that's great. But a lot of HBCUs honestly don't have the resources to put that much money, time, and effort into recruiting. You think about, you know, big time universities, they're on the road, you know, traveling, you know, pretty much all of spring, you know, putting a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of effort, you know, mail, emails, calls, like, you know, a lot of HBCUs don't have the staff or resources to make that happen. So they're automatically behind the eight ball because they just can't keep up with big time universities and that. And then on top of that, they don't have that that appeal. They don't have the facilities because you walk into Virginia, you know, they're not the greatest. They don't have the greatest facilities, but they still have damn good facilities. So you go into, you know, their weight room, their locker room, their fields, you're like, wow. And then you go to Norfolk State or Hampton. It's like, you know, no disrespect, you know, they have good facilities, but they're not top notch, you know? So it's just hard to compete like that.
Yeah. I mean, I agree wholeheartedly. Went to Salem State in my hometown, HBCU. I got nothing but a questionnaire and no follow-up, no anything. And I was very familiar with the university. And back in those days, they had a big time program. And but like I said, I think to your point, I don't know whether I was outside of what they wanted or they feel like they didn't have a shot. But I think the dynamic and it may change, you know, as you see these young boys, some of the 4 and 5 star basketball players have decided that they're going to attend HBCUs. But it's also, they may be one and done type situation, you know, the situation. They, you know, and a lot of kids, let's be honest, man, they want to be on TV.
Yeah.
I want my boys to be able to see me on TV. and to your point, the facilities and all the accoutrements that come with going to schools that do have more financial resources, you know, that, I think there's always going to be a challenge there. I'd love to see a shift where more of the talent is going to those HBCUs, because I think if they did that, then the money would potentially follow. Because if you're starting to win at a high level, if you've got 4 and 5 star kids that are going to HBCUs and are changing the dynamic of and how successful they become, that then they start to get on TV a little bit more, and then that potential TV money follows them. The potential shoe contract follows them. So the Nike and the Adidas, et cetera, et cetera. And then they can begin to upgrade the facilities to become, you know, more competitive with the bigger schools. I don't think they'll ever be able to compete with them financially, but I think it would be awesome to see the HBCUs get some of those dollars to be able to help grow their program. So, I'm just not sure if it'll happen, but it would truly be nice to see it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're so far behind right now. Like, it's going to take years and years for them to catch that. That's the thing. Like, you know what? Big time college football has been happening for, you know, two, three decades now. So, like, they're so far behind, it's going to be, you know, another 10, 15 years before they're even able to catch these universities. And then when they think they've caught up, those universities are going to be even further ahead. So it's difficult, you know, it's a tough situation, man.
Yeah. And I asked that question because I'm always intrigued, because when we had these conversations about HBCUs, I always fall back on the recruiting trails. Like, okay, you know, you come from the area where HU was at in Norfolk State. When I was growing up, James Rowe, who ended up playing for the Bengals, went to Norfolk State. So a kid like me, I didn't even know the difference. I just knew Hampton University, Norfolk State, Virginia, Florida. Like, I didn't do the HBCUs and PW. Like, I was naive back then. So I just wanted to see if they gave you more than just a questionnaire, because most of the time they do. And once they see a D1 school is recruiting you, they kind of back off. And a lot of times a kid may entertain you, you just don't know. But yeah,
shoot,
I think
your
you
shot.
Hit the nail on the head. Yeah.
I think you should shoot your shot. Establish the relationship. You never know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Never know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for our listeners who don't know what HBCU is, that's historically black colleges and universities. Just wanted to make sure everybody on the same page with us. So came down to Duke and Virginia. Interestingly, David, Duke and Virginia were my final two candidates as well. Because, you know, like you, academics was huge in my household. And so, you know, I'm thinking, where can I go to get the best education, to get the good job when it's done? Yeah. Couldn't go wrong with that decision. And so either way, but then I just evaluated the football programs and it was a no-brainer for me. You know, Duke, I'm from North Carolina. So, of course, Duke was a quick hour and 15 away, and UVA was only about 3 hours. So the folks could get to come check their son out too. So, all right. So you come to Virginia that first year. Once you hit the campus, what were your thoughts when you started, you know, getting into the program?
Yeah. Man, first of all, I was happy to be free, man. Like, get out the house, like, be away from the parents, you know, my first taste of freedom. But then, like, that connection you get with your teammates, like, right away, man, there's nothing like it. That's probably the thing I miss most about college is having that connection with your boys. Like, every day you on the same grind, same goals. Like, you know, some of you come up, you know, the same areas, same backgrounds. Like, you just get that connection with your boys, and then just going through that process together, it really brings you closer and closer together. You become like brothers, man. So there was a lot in my class, there was a lot of 757 guys, so it was I can't even tell you how much. It was probably almost half the dang class. Like, it was a lot of 757 guys. So my class was close just from that alone. And then, you know, the grind, just you know, I got to get around a lot of hardworking dudes. And, you know, I thought I worked hard going into college, but nah, I ain't worked hard enough. So I got to see some older guys work, like Chase Minifield, like see how they grind, how they handle their business. And that kind of like pushed me to go harder. And from, you know, the older guys, I learned how to really, you know, handle myself, be a professional, and just can, you know, get better every day. Try to, you know, work your craft, work the weight room, and just go after it. So, being around the older guys, learning the ropes, and then, you know, starting that brotherhood with the younger guys that you come in with, man, it's nothing like it. But unfortunately, a lot of those guys you come in with, you don't leave with. So I saw a lot of things of what you should do in college and things that you shouldn't do in college. So experience, man.
Did you come in early, like June or July, and take summer classes, or did you wait until the August report date?
We came in like June. We came in, June, and we had like two summer courses.
Okay.
And, that was great. I think every student athlete should do that. I think everybody should be given that summer period to kind of transition, take some classes, get a feel for what it should be or how you should handle your business. And then, because when you go into that season, you know, you don't have a lot of time in the summer, but you really don't have any time in the fall during the season. Like, it's a real grind. You know, I redshirted, so I had a little bit more time, but still, we only really got like one day off. And even on that day off, you had to work out in the morning. So it's a real grind in the fall. So I think every student athlete should have to come in the summer and take classes and get ready for the fall for real.
And to piggyback off you coming in the summer, because if you didn't come until August, I would have waited until Cove talked about follow-up year. How was your first summer workout? Charles Snowden went blind his first workout. So how was your first summer? Because people don't realize that fall workout don't hold a candle to a summer workout. So how was your first summer workout?
You know, they kind of warm you up to it. Like, you know, you start off with some simple conditioning. So I got past like the first two workouts pretty easy. It's not really tough, but then that next week, they start pushing you, boy. We had Coach Evan Marcus, man, big swole neck. Man, he was scared. He was going at us, yelling, cursing, going crazy. And I think we had some gashers, and I think I didn't finish through the gashers. Like, I died, man. I threw up, man. And I didn't make it through the workout. And I just felt the disappointment from the coach, from Coach Marcus. And from then, like, that's when I learned, like, bro, I got to pick it up. Like, I ain't messing around no more. So after that, right. Like, I made sure I was on it. Like, I just kept grinding. I was running on my own, just getting in better shape. But, I never let Coach Marcus down again, dog. Hey, I ain't with him in my neck at all.
Yeah, that's good. That's good business. So how hard was it for you that first year getting redshirted and the team was really having some success, you know, and to get a bowl game and all of that? How hard was that for you?
It was hard, man, because I didn't really feel like I was a part of that. You know, I was a part of the culture, you know, I gave great looks on scout, you know, that's cool and all, but it's not the same when you're not strapping it up on game day. So, right. You know, I just took that experience and just learned from it, and I used it for motivation in my off season. But, again, I got to see like how the older guys did it, how they prepared, how they, you know, what they did to make them successful. And I just took bits and pieces of what they did and made it my own. And I think that's how I started growing like I did, because I just watched the older guys do it. And I was like, look, if they're doing it like that and they're, you know, they're successful, they're making plays, they're getting the job done, that's how I got to do it. So
right.
I just use it as a learning experience, as motivation. And so next year I was like, I'm going to get on that field. Like, I got to make it happen.
So, So then 2012, you played in 11 or 12 games.
Yeah.
How did you feel your production was? How were you advancing? What were you learning?
So that was my redshirt freshman year. So I wasn't starting, but I was playing in pretty much all the games. And I was, you know, I got some production, but I was kind of just getting my feet wet a little bit. And, you know, I got my first sack that season. So, you know, getting that feeling of like getting up, crowd going crazy, getting a little taste of that, man, that ain't nothing like it, man. So that again, that was, you know, driving me. I want to make more plays. I want to get more, you know, I want to get on the field more. So I just kept pushing and pushing. And my D-line coach, like, straight asshole. Coach Hansen, you could ask anybody. He's an asshole, but he gonna get everything out of you. And he pushed me, you know, he pushes you every day. And so he makes you come in with that mindset every day of practice where you gotta get better. You're not gonna get worse. You gotta keep pushing, getting better, keep grinding, and finding a part of your game just to work on. So, you know, even though I wasn't playing a lot, I was continuing just to grind, still watching older guys get it done. And, you know, just trying to be the best me I could be, competing with myself, right.
Right. And Jim Reed was your DC.
Coach Reed.
Describe your relationship with him, man. And what kind of dude he was.
He was, man, Coach Reed, probably the best coach I've ever played for. He wasn't just a football coach. He was like a life coach. He was like a father figure. Like, he cared about every player he coached. He cared about them as a man and as a person before a football player. Mm-hmm. Like, going in the meetings, my first camp with him, we probably didn't even, in the defensive meetings, we didn't even talk football for the first couple of meetings. He would just read his passages, about growth and manhood and just teaching us life lessons. And to me, like, I've never had a coach like that, because, you know, football, you know, once you get into college, it's business. It's not really, you know, it's fun. There's passion in it. I enjoy it. A lot of us enjoy it. But as soon as money becomes involved in it, it's business. So, like, most coaches handle it as business, which you got to respect because they got families to feed. But Coach Reed, like, he had a completely different approach. He was he just cared about you as a man, as a person, and he grew you as that. And then football was just mm-hmm. something that, you know, we had fun and we did. Mm-hmm. But he was a great defensive mind, great defensive coach, but he just, you know what I'm saying, he just had a different approach to the game. And I have the utmost respect for that man for that. That's why I think he's so successful in his career. It's because he has players every year that will run through a wall for him because
they want to
win for him. So everywhere he's gone, he's won games. Like, it doesn't, you know, he's never had really, you know, a bad gone anywhere and done poorly. He's gone everywhere and succeeded. So
yeah, and Henry Coley speaks highly of Jim Reed as well. So it's like reassuring to hear a different player say the same thing, because when I talked to Henry Coley a lot, shout out to Coley, and he says the same thing. He speaks so highly of Jim Reed, yeah. Similar to Cuff, how we talk about Coach Welch, like hearing guys that played under Jim Reed describe him is an eerie feeling, because you can see how sincere they are when they talk about him.
Yeah, man, you get chills just thinking about it. It's like,
he was just a great dude.
He put that work in too. Like, he would go running before every practice. You see him out in the field just running. Like, mind you, he got to be like 70, 80 some years old, but he running slow, but he getting it. He running, he's going, he's pushing. He'll be, I've heard, you know, I've never seen him myself, but I heard stories of him sleeping in the, you know, in his office, watching film all night. Like, he pushed that work in. So, like, he's a, man, good Coach Reed's that dude, man.
Outstanding. Yeah. So you guys finished that year 4-8, coming off the 8-5 season, 4-8, and a coaching change happened. So there is no more Coach Reed.
Yeah.
Enter John Tenuta.
Yeah.
Okay. 2013, you had a very successful year, 36 tackles, 5 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks, mm-hmm. 1 forced fumble. How was that transition from Jim Reed to John Tenuta?
Man, it was I had a different D-line coach, too. I probably had, three different D-line coaches in college. So
that's a lot, too.
I went through a lot of changes, man. And a lot of
people don't understand how difficult that is to deal with.
Yeah, that's different terminology, different philosophies.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Never get honed in on your skill, really. You're changing your skill to fit a different coach or a different position coach, a different defensive coordinator, different styles of play. It's hard to really, you know, your craft is your craft, you know, your technique is your technique, but it's hard when you're playing in different schemes. It's just mm-hmm. you're consistently transitioning, so it's tough. But Coach Tenuta, his scheme was different from Coach Reed's in a sense that it was super aggressive. He liked to blitz. He liked to game. He liked to move a lot. Coach Reed was very he ran more of a base scheme. We still were a 4-3 get off, but we really weren't as gap conscious in Tenuta's scheme as we were in Coach Reed's scheme. So Tenuta used to let us fly off the ball, cross blocks at times, like, but it was super disruptive. So even though we weren't, you know, as gap sound, we made a lot more tackles for losses, sacks, just because we were getting off the rock. Like, we weren't really, mm-hmm. you know, we were just rushing. And it's great for D linemen, but if the whole defense can't play together, it can be bad because we'll let up more big plays. We'll make more mistakes. But I think we had a few good years in Coach Tenuta's defense, more good than bad. We had, because, you know, turnovers, picks, like, we were making plays. But unfortunately, you got to be able to put up points, too, and I think that's where we struggled most. But Coach Tenuta, Coach Reed, two different types of coaching styles, and it was two different types of experiences, man.
Mm-hmm. So, Yeah, because, I mean, while you guys were more disruptive and more attacking the wins and losses, you know, you went 2-10 that first year with a new OC and a new DC, you know, so people questioning things. And, you know, and we all have heard the stories that you really had a coaching staff that was very disjointed. Mike London didn't get to choose. You know, it wasn't Mike London's decision that these new coaches came in. You know, you had a guy that was wanted to be a GM, that was kind of calling the shots. And so you never were able, you know, Coach London had no say in that. And I feel like he was very much hamstrung when it comes to that, and didn't necessarily have the best people around him. You know, he had a relationship with Jim Reed and Hanson and all those guys. And that makes a difference, you know. And so then, you know, you guys, boom, 2-10. Everybody's kind of scratching their head a little bit. And then enter 2014. You started all 12 games. You know, the defense was ranked nationally 20th versus the run at 120.7 per game. You were a key, you know, cog in that wheel, as well as a pass rush that was ranked 22nd nationally with 34 sacks. Yeah. So the disruption that you referenced was much more apparent, and then that translated into a 5-7. So, you know, there was progress, but still, how did you feel about that year? That, you know, yeah, your production was great because you know, for you, 40 tackles, 8 tackles for loss, 3 pass breakups. Shout out to the pass breakups.
Get your hands up.
One sack, interception for a touchdown. You know, so you all over the place doing your thing. You know, how was that season for you?
Yeah. It was good, man. That season was I was probably the most fun season I had. Like we had Eli, Mike, Max. Like we had some dogs, man. Our D line was cold. We had some, you know, great secondary, great linebackers. Like we just used to lock shit down. But again, you know, offense struggled a bit. But also, people don't realize our schedule in these years
was ridiculous.
Were ridiculously hard. Like one of the toughest schedules in the country. We were playing, you know, the fans were coming to the games because we were playing big names, but we weren't winning them. You know, it was a tough schedule. And I'm not saying that we weren't fit to play those guys. I think we can compete with any team in the nation, but it's hard to play teams, you know, great teams back to back to back and have to play, like, bring your all in and win those games. So it was just a tough schedule for us. I think we had a great defense, and we just couldn't, at the end of the day, we couldn't make enough plays to win the game. And we just unfortunately didn't ever get back to a bowl game, but it's tough, man. Hey, wins and losses.
I think you said the key thing though, man. Like the business side was on display because of who you guys were playing. And it wasn't fair to the stage of the program which you were in to play those teams back to back to back.
They never really gave Coach London an opportunity to have that year where we were like, okay, we're going to schedule you for, you know, West, you know, just, you know, small colleges that we can, you know, have some easy wins, get those 3 or 4 wins,
and winning mentality
games, and go to a bowl game. Yeah, you know, it's just about consistent. Like, look how I think Duke has the right formula, or had the right formula with Cutcliffe. They were just playing, you know, 3-4 small schools, and then just pulling out 3 ACC wins, getting six wins a season, going to bowl games, building confidence, getting the fans behind them. Getting bigger recruits, better recruits. I don't think recruiting was an issue for us, but I think our confidence and our consistently winning, like our mindset was kind of getting crushed because we were playing all these big games and we were hyped for them. We were competing in these games. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we did beat, you know, Penn State 1 year. Oregon smacked us, but
UCLA
like
a lot of people.
You know, UCLA, we were running with, like, you know, there's a lot of big teams that we play that were, you know, top 10, top 5 teams that we were playing with in games with. Some we beat, some we didn't. But it's tough to play, you know, 4 of those teams a year and expect to get, you know, 3-4 wins out of it. So it was a tough situation, man. Again, that's where I started to learn the business side, not only with them kind of forcing Coach London's hand to, you know, pick a staff that he didn't really want, but also with the, like you said, the scheduling of games, seeing, you know, they really weren't scheduling us to win. They were scheduling to fill seats, to get on TV, to,
Yeah, make that money.
It's the business, man. And like,
and isn't it amazing? Like full circle, if you think about, if you've been paying attention to the program now, because Broncos was one thing I love about Bronco. He's a realist, and he talked about having cupcakes and air quotations on your schedule to build and get those wins. And folks think they're empty wins.
Early wins.
What you're saying is, as a player, you're confident when you have a 5-1, 5-2 record, and then you go up against the Oregon and it's late in the game because you've had that taste of victory. Mm-hmm. So you become addicted to that. When you always falling up short and then you get into a close game with a big time team, it's muscle memory. You resort back to what's been going on. And you guys were always in games, and then when the wheels fell, they all four fell off. It wasn't like one fell off. Now you can put a donut on and see if you can still get home. Anytime back then we got in a close game and something bad, or it's either something bad happened or somebody was expecting something bad to happen.
It was something in the air, man, I swear. You just felt the breeze. You're like, what's that? Oh, shit.
Right.
And, yeah, it's right, man. It's just the mindset, man. I think I probably had some of the most fun I had playing this past season on my CFL team, the Tiger Cats, because we were winning consistently. And, like, for the first time, you know, I got to experience what it was like to be in those pressure moments in those big games. Mm-hmm. And, like, people, you know, I was coming through. People were coming through with plays, making plays just to change that momentum, get the confidence going, like, that's huge, man. Mindset is huge in football. I'm telling you, like.
No question. We're gonna talk about little bit about the CFL in a bit. I wanted to finish up the UVA piece. But I agree with you, man. You know, at that point where our program was, we had no business playing the Oregons and the UCLA's and the Boise States. That we really did ourselves a disservice by, you know, well, they did. They did Mike London and the guys at this and you guys a disservice by scheduling like that. And because you're right, it doesn't build confidence, you know, and you guys are out there playing hard, going for it. But it was just, you know, we just weren't there yet, man. And so you guys were truly not set up for success. And that's unfortunate. Yeah. So as you look at that the 2015, sorry about y'all. Hear the pooch barking in the back.
Killer doing his job.
Yo, he's security, and all he doing is like alarm, because I'm not gonna go. I just want to let y'all know that somebody is here. You know, he can't see him. He old. That's my man. Yo, Chico Lowrider Smith. That's his name. Chico Lowrider Smith. That is his name. He making his presence known. So y'all forgive me, listeners. He wanted to be on the show.
Yeah.
And he wanted his time. And you know, so shout out to Chico Lowrider.
He is underdog.
No question. And he goes hard. But yeah, so then we roll in that 2015 year. All right. You guys open up at UCLA, play Notre Dame, play William & Mary, play Boise State. I mean, that was kind of a murderer's row in the first four games. Now, you know, you put your numbers up. You know, you started all 12 games that year, 42 tackles, 8.5 tackles for loss, 4.5 sacks, 2 pass breakers. You will get your pass break up, won't you?
Got to get
them hands up.
You got to affect the quarterback every way possible. Yeah.
And he jumped like Zach Randolph. I don't know how he be getting bat down.
You know, so the vert now.
He said, "Don't do me like that." Right. he about to give me his vert, his testing for his vertical now.
Right,
32 inches. Right. Thank you. Right. 40.
Talk it's in spicy. 30,
you, know, you were one of the 14 captains. You know, how did you your last year? What was your mindset for that season? And then how it ended up? How did you feel about that?
Well, that was my first time since high school being in the captain role. So I just wanted to just be an influence on, you know, on as many guys as possible. Try to, you know, be more verbal, speak my mind. You got to, like, you know, being captain is a tough role. You know, unfortunately, we didn't get the wins, but I just tried to, you know, put my hands on as many young guys as I could, like just try to influence them, show them my work ethic, show them how I go, and make plays and try to just, you know, push others to be great, man. So again, like a tough season, but you know, I had fun. It was my last ride. Didn't get to beat Tech, but but I got, you know, I've always played great against Tech. Always. Yeah. I always have my best games against Tech, and we can never beat them. And you know why? Because I just got a chip on my shoulder because they literally came to my high school and told me I was too short to play there. Every year I play them, I try to go off, and I do. I think I got every game I play them, I got a sack in the TFL, and I got a strip sack. I got a pick six. Like, man, I go crazy against them, but could never beat them. But yeah, that year was great for me, man. And you know, we didn't get the wins, but you know, I was productive, and I got to put my best, you know, my best film on.
Well, I mean, and yeah, you finished all ACC honorable mention.
Yeah,
and got invited to play in the East West Shrine Game. So I mean, you did your thing. You did your thing. And one point that I wanted to roll back to, because I skipped over it, you were really focused on academics. You know, that I think that was, as you spoke to earlier, that was a major part of your decision. That, you know, they came down to Duke and UVA, and you were all ACC, all academic, ACC. And to me, that speaks to that because it is student athlete. And that's one of the things that we always want to harp on and discuss. And, you know, what people may not know about you, you graduated with a bachelor's from the university and your master's from the university. Sir. So, you know, that's one thing that I constantly brag about you when I'm talking to folks, like, yo, that's one of my mentees. I'm proud of them. And, you know, as we talk about your migration to the professional ranks and putting people in front of you, I'm like, hey, this is my guy, look after him. Always extremely proud of that, and always loved your eyes as you were about to get into that competition. I think people think I'd be kidding when I say I'd go down to the field and I'm in y'all's grill, you know, hugging y'all, trying to get your mind right.
No, you already know you gotta turn that switch on. That's a different mindset when you between the white lines.
Man, yeah, Curry, slap your head hard as hell. That's what's coming. You know what's coming. He gonna slap the shit out of your helmet.
Yeah, well, you know, I be trying not to headbutt him because I got big out of helmet and I don't, but I be so gassed up, you know.
Damn meat beaters he got on his damn wrist. Things hurt, man. He be dapping me up before he got. I said, dog, I'm about to go in the box with you. Why are you getting me? Why are you slapping me so hard, cub?
Man, hey, look, hey, Hawk, you know that thing don't go away, man. And like I say, dogs like David, dogs like Eli, you know, you look into their eyes and you see that they about that life and it's about to go down and you know it's about to go down.
But you know what's so crazy about Dave, though, dog, Double D from the 7-5? What I love about Dave when we used to talk to him for the games, he was like me. He would be smiling, but it'd be rage behind his eyes and he's smiling like, yeah, I'm about to destroy your ass with a smile. Yeah. Service with a smile. Yeah. That's what was scary about him. He was always smiling. Like, I'm having fun,
but I'm whooping your ass at the same
That's
time.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I used to look at you like, yo, something wrong with him. He could be in a one technique between a guard and the center, smiling. No, he got a two gap, and he's like, nah, I don't care. Let me hit the swim move. Let me get back there.
Yeah, dude, your burst was always sick, bro.
Yeah, his feet was crazy.
Was just like your burst, that initial burst was so impressive, and then the strength to just control. Bro, I would be looking at you like, how in the hell did he just do that?
Gotta be crazy, man. It's all about
We ain't gassing you up, bro. All week, me and Cub will always say, like, yo, Dave, get off would be crazy. Yeah. Like, yo, how does he get off the ball so damn fast? I mean, I know the ball's in front of you, but a lot of people, because it went from you. And then Drew was the same way, AB.
Drew, yes.
He was the same way. He had your get all too. Yeah.
But, yeah, you know who I used to watch? Cam Johnston, man. That's who get off. I used to, man, his get off. My first year was stupid. He was a crazy athlete, bro. When I seen his get off, I was like, yeah, I gotta have my get off like that.
Yeah. Right.
He was
right.
A get off the rock.
Hey, did you play against was Aaron Donald at Pitt when you
yes.
was at UGA?
Oh my God.
How was it seeing him in the college level knowing y'all play the same position?
It was the same. I was watching the top 100, and what they say about him in the NFL is what I used to say about him in college. Like, you try to watch film and see what he does, like, you know, like, all right, try to mimic it. All right, maybe I can do this, but it's like, bruh, he doing things that nobody can do. It's impossible to do what he does almost. He's just a different beast, like, different, man.
He's just different. So he's alien like.
You know somebody special when they just say, he's just different.
He's just that's different, bruh.
It's For sure. So you finished your career as number four all-time defensive tackle with 25.5 tackles for loss. That's pretty damn impressive, bro.
Man, I didn't even know that.
That's work.
That's a lot, bro.
Yeah, bro. That's work, bro. That's work. So then you know, last year done, you preparing to go in the draft, and draft day comes. How did that whole process start
Man,
for you?
I really didn't know what was coming. You know, but I just wanted an opportunity. You know, everybody want to get drafted, but for me, like, I just wanted to get an opportunity. I knew if someone got me in, if I got into a room somewhere, I was going to make a squad. Like,
facts.
Man, it's just my mindset, my work ethic. I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to impress somebody. I'm going to make plays at the end of the day. It might, you know, my technique might not always be the greatest, but I'm a playmaker. Like, I'm going to make plays. You know, as my, you know, technique's gotten better, things have gotten easier, but I'm a playmaker. So I knew, like, I just needed the opportunity. So once I got the call from the Bengals right after the draft, like, I think the last pick just got announced. And, like, I got a call shortly after from the D-line coach. And, man, we went straight with Cincinnati. So I went in there and I was like, hey, you know, I'm gonna come make, you know, make y'all remember my name, man. I'm gonna turn some heads.
Right. Hey, you remember us having the conversation.
You gotta realize this, Dave.
I know.
I feel your pain, brother, from the draft.
Yeah.
Cub was blessed of hearing his name in highlights, but we went undrafted. So I know out of the last damn pick coming, we like, oh, now you want to call
me? But you gonna answer that phone though?
Yeah, with the quickness. Hello, sir. Yes, sir.
But do you remember the conversation that I was? Because I knew I was like, you know, your mentality and your work ethic. All you needed was a shot. Our conversation? I was just like,
yes, sir.
Okay, I know you're going to make.
Always got something fire to say. That's what I love.
I know you're gonna make the team.
Yes, sir. Every point in my career, when I've had a low point, I always call T Cub.
Oh yeah,
that's always got something.
I do the same thing, bro.
Always got, and then as soon as I hang up the phone with him, I'm like, all right, let's go. And then from that moment, like, things just change. Like, man, bro, NFL, CFL, life, whatever. Like, I always call T Cub. He always
call Cub Black Jesus, man.
Oh damn,
Black Jesus. Black Jesus, baby, right here, right man, in the flesh.
Bless you.
So you get to Cincinnati. Talk about that first season,
man. It was a learning experience. I never got to crack the 53. I was on practice squad. Literally, no D tackles got hurt, man. So I was just learning and just staying ready. I got to play behind Geno Atkins, man. Like
a beast,
bruh. When I first practice with him, that's where I understood there's levels to this shit. Like, this is different. him and Aaron Donald to me are like, just they do things that just people, you know, other people can't do, other D tackles can't do. Like, I seen Geno literally lift up, get off. Was like a stretch play, so the guard trying to reach him, the guard kind of overreaches, so he kind of is like, he's pretty light. Geno gets off, goes straight, lifts up the guard, throws him like 3 yards in the backfield, makes the TFL. Like, picks up a 330-pound man and throws him and makes the TFL. He's like, he made it look so easy. You don't understand. It's just something you got to see. But like, I got to like, just, you know, I'm not as strong as him, but there's a lot of technical things I got to learn from him. So just learning from him, seeing how he handled his business, and just being in the NFL locker room, man, I learned a lot. It was a great experience, man. So, yeah, man, it was cool.
How was that transition? Because if we go back to your college days, you got Jim Reed, who was very, you know, like you said, base, understanding technique, gapping, a lot of responsibility. Then you had Tanuta as a defensive lineman. You get to just attack, make plays. Like you say, you get to cross the face. Sometimes, you know, it's not the best decision, but it's a high risk. And then you get to the NFL. Did you feel like the best of both worlds kind of helped you in your transition, definitely, or you still have things to learn?
It was – you know what? I never realized that, but you're actually right, because the D coordinator, Paul Gunther, he's in Oakland, I think, right now, but he was with Coach Lewis in Cincinnati when I was there, and he was a kind of get-off type defense, 4-3 get-off, and our D-line coach wanted to get off, but he also wanted us to play, you know, play within the limits of the defense, he would always say. So we got off, you know, we had, you know, rush when you got to rush, but being your gap during the run always. So it was definitely the best of both worlds. So that helped me a lot. My get off, I think, impressed the coaches like day one. So I was able to, you know, and then making plays as always, that's what I do. I was making plays early. One of my good friends, Billings, he was the fourth round pick, kind of ahead of me. I played the three. He only played the nose. I played the three and the nose. So he got hurt, and then I pretty much started taking all his reps, and then that was the opportunity I needed. I got more reps, and I just kept making plays, and I was getting off, getting pressure, then just consistently, you know, having your name on that production board, that's, you know, they can't really – can't take if you make your plays, they can't do nothing. They gotta, it is what it is. They gotta respect it.
And what for the fans that heard you speak in a foreign language, three and the nose, can you just layman's term get on what that means?
So I play the one technique, which is the, you know, like an outside shade on the center, and I play the three technique, which is like an outside shade on the guard. I also can play the zero, which is like a head up on the nose. And, you know, 2-eye kind of inside shade of the guard. So I play pretty much all across the D-line. Even, like, now I'm starting to play, like, 5 technique now. So, like, I play everywhere. Like,
yeah, man. You big sexy, man.
Hey, I told you I'm, like, 285 right now. Your boy is moving.
I like that, dog.
Okay. So then, that after that first year, how did things finish up, and how did we transition to next?
So, I just got straight to training. I started living in Atlanta for a bit, just getting back to the grind, trying to work on my skills some more. So I just trained all spring, went to OTA, had my first like real like OTAs. Just, you know, learning the playbook more, diving deeper into the playbook. Again, like, you know, honing in on your skill more, you know, crafting more. And then went back to Atlanta, trained, and then went to camp. And that's when I really learned the business of football.
Yeah.
I got injured in my first or my second camp. And that's when that was probably the toughest, most humbling experiences of my life, because I was feeling great, man. Like, you know, I trimmed down. I didn't lose a lot of weight, but I, you know, my body changed. I trimmed down. I was still like 300, 305, but, you know, lost some baby fat, so I was feeling good. And then first play of the first 9-on-7 of camp. It was like the second practice, and I got double teamed. Somebody fell on the back of my ankle, and ankle just gave out. I thought it was just a sprain, so I just kept like trying to rehab it, and ended up, I got cut because I wasn't practicing. I wasn't playing. I think I played in the last preseason game, thinking everything was cool. Like, and I learned, you know, learned the hard side of the business, man. I shouldn't have played, probably. I thought I would just had a sprained ankle. And I play, I get cut, probably that, you know, at the, because it was the last preseason game, I get cut. And then I'm home, like, my ankle's still kind of messing with me, bothering me. So then I decided to get an MRI. And that's when I find out I have torn ligaments in my ankle. So I was playing on like three torn ligaments, thinking I had a sprained ankle. Man, I don't know. And to this day, I don't know how I had the willpower to do that. Like, I have no idea, man. So again, I learned the business side of it. I probably shouldn't have played, but me being like, you know, tough minded, just trying to, you know, be hard and like, you know, make a roster and, you know, impress everybody.
Yeah.
I ended up doing myself a disjustice. So, it was unfortunate the way it happened, man, but it was a learning experience. And, you know, from that day, I kind of learned to treat football as business. You know, have your fun, but, like, it's business at the end of the day, man. You got to handle your body, you know, as your business.
Yeah, because all Cincinnati wanted to do for all the listeners is that – so David's last true play is an injury. And if he never appears in the game or on camera again – and they decide to cut him, it becomes an injury and a settlement because he has to pass a physical. But the fact that he played one play is showing that he's healthy, and now they don't have to investigate the injured ankle because he demonstrated he was healthy to play. So that's why hindsight is, if you're hurt and you think something's wrong, don't get on the eye on the sky because they will use that against you because it's a business. So
I used to always be that dude too that was like, man, he ain't really hurt. Like, he just I used to always be that dude, but after that I understood. I was like, man, I see why people don't play hurt now. Like, there's some shady shit that goes on behind the scenes, man. You gotta look out for yourself because the people up here ain't gonna look
nasty.
For you.
It's a nasty business. Nasty business.
It's cutthroat, boy.
Yeah, it really is.
Football don't love you back. I just want to tell folks that. As much as we love this game, it won't love you back. You got to understand
that. It will go on with or without you. It will not stop you.
Facts. So then you do that. You did you eventually have surgery or what how did you do this?
I got surgery.
That you had to pay for?
Yeah, I had to pay everything out of pocket, man. Everything. Ooh. I ended up settling. Cause I lawyered up and went after him, and I should have really got a whole season's worth, but because the case wasn't that great, cause they had film of me playing.
Yeah.
I barely really got my surgery paid for at the end of the day. It was
going against the NFL, baby. They going to bully you to settle. Cause they got the resources.
They got big pockets.
Yeah.
They got big pockets.
Yeah.
They can out lawyer you all. They can outspend you all day.
Yeah, that's because my lawyer was from the NFLPA, and he was saying that, like, look, we can try and fight this. We can try, you know, and get more money, but your chances aren't that great. They Cincinnati is known for, like, I wasn't the first guy they've done that. They've done that multiple times. Like, they are known for doing what they did to me. So, like, they're used to fighting it, and they'll get away with it. So my lawyer was like, look, just take what you can get and just get out.
That's a fact.
So then you had the surgery, you're rehabbing, you know, that what's next? Because I want to get to the article that was written about your transition when I had to get the phone and call you and dig in your ass.
Yeah. Oh, Lord, I got to sit back and listen to this.
Man, I got real down, man. I was, you know, it was my first – I'd never been injured before that. I had never needed surgery. I never really even missed a game. So, like – It was tough for me mentally, man. I went to a dark place. Like, I had gotten a surgery. I couldn't walk for, like, you know, for 8 weeks. You know, after I got back in my boot, I tried to, like, start a rehabbing. And, you know, I went through that whole process. And then where I'm from in Virginia Beach, I really didn't have the resources that I needed. Mm-hmm. So really needed to, you know, one, you know, network and, you know, we don't have the facilities here that there are in, say, Atlanta or South Florida. So I ended up moving down to South Florida and finishing my rehab and training. And I got into just, you know, I was still in the bad place, but I was still grinding, trying to keep the dream alive, but things really weren't happening. And so, you know, I started working. I was doing any job I can do just so I could still train. and, you know, make money at the same time. So I was just, you know, doing little part-time jobs here and there, still training, still staying in shape. I was meeting some good people in South Florida at the facility I was in, you know, NFL athletes, agents coming in all the time. So I was still networking, trying to make it happen. But it's hard when you, after you get going to a settlement case with a team, you sort of get blacklisted. They, you know, they see that, you know, your last stint, you got, you know, cut, released, and ended up suing, you know, suing the team. So, like,
yeah,
they kind of put you on a blacklist. So, yeah. I really don't think I got a, you know, fair shot because of that. So, I had to move on, and, you know, I was, again, in a dark place, just working all the time and, you know, doing some shitty jobs. And
yeah, just, like, you know, what?
I was doing shitty jobs, like, dog. What? I was doing trash, sales calls, I was working at a gym.
You weren't stripping or nothing, was you?
You know y'all like it. So
I was making good because you funny.
You know, you look pretty. You're a little pretty Ricky, dude. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, dark caramel. Yeah. Dark caramel coming down.
Coming to the stage.
But yeah, man. So luckily, the guy, I met this guy, Troy Jones, at this gym. Fitspeed, it's not House Athlete, and he just kind of like took me under his wing, and we just kept grinding, and eventually opportunity came with the AAF. And that's where you know, I was able to get back into football. I don't know if y'all, probably listeners, don't all maybe know about the AAF, but it was kind of like what they planned for it to be, like a developmental league for the NFL. Yep. And so that lasted 8 weeks, and then that got ended. And then I ended up where I'm at now in the CFL. So that whole, you know, I went from being in a super dark place, being, you know, just to myself, just grinding, trying to find a way, and to, you know, finally getting back into the game. So but so, I kind of learned, like, you know, T-Cov was in my, was definitely on me, but
yeah, no. We ain't gonna do that because you trying to gloss over. What did he say to you?
Man, I got to
– He dug in your hind part, John Brian hind parts. I'm trying to hear the story.
I was in my feelings, man. I got to – I had to learn to network. I got a lot of people that, you know, that are looking out for me, especially T-Cub, man. And I wasn't in touch with him as like I should have been. And, you know, he could have helped me a lot more. It's just like I had that mindset, like I can do it by myself, like, you know, just angry at the world. But – it wasn't until I started networking and started reaching out to people where my life started to change. And like, I started to get the opportunities with the AAF, because it wasn't until I finally was like, all right, I'm done with this agent. Let me network, find another agent. I got another agent. And literally like weeks after that, I got the AAF opportunity. So it was reaching out to people, talking to people, getting out my feelings, stop acting light skin. And
no. What did he say? the fans want to look, they know when they come to this show, this is uncut. What the hell did he say? I want to know. I'm nosy. Petty Hawk has
it
appeared.
Was just like, he was like,
you was like, in a dark place. Ring, you call Cove. Go.
No, Cove called me. Called him.
No, Cove called me. You. Hello? Yes. This David. This Cove. Go.
He was like, what the hell are you doing? Messing around with trash.
Straight up.
Like, what Straight the hell up. Are you doing? He's like, you got me right here. You know, I can do anything for you, man. I can make, you know, I can reach out to people, get a lot of shit done for you. What the hell are you doing? You ain't calling me. You ain't talking to me. What's going on, man? And yeah, man, I told him, man, I was just mad at the world, man. But he put me back in the check. And yeah, that's why I love Cub, man. He always looking out for
you
me.
You know,
man,
what it was though, Dean, and a lot of and I can relate with you, is that when we are released from an NFL team, we feel like we failures, and we're so used to being in that bubble and so used to being successful that when we had that backslide, we're afraid to show our face because we feel like we let people down.
Yeah.
And that's how I know, you know, where you're coming from when you're going to that dark place, bro. So, and we talked about this with Eli Harrell, how mental health plays a role. You were going through, you know, mental health kicked in for you. It was like this when you, that's when your support system is the most important, because somebody like Cove and somebody like myself, anybody that was in your corner here, we stay there no matter the success, because we care about David Dean, the person. We don't look at you as number 55.
Yeah.
We see you as David Dean, period. So I understand your stance. And now as an adult that's over 40 years old, I understand where Cove is coming from as well. So I'm glad, you know, Cove cursed you out.
I had to, because like I said, you know, I was hurt because it took me reading the article to know what the hell he was going through, and I'm like, wait a minute, that's my dude, why is he not picking up the phone? You know what I'm saying? And so after I had dug in his ass, and it was like, I think I was walking around a Nike outlet at the time, I'm just going off.
Ooh, you getting the Jordans. Nike outlet.
Bruh, you know, and you know, because it's like, dude, I understand that part, you know, but that's it. Now is the time, this is the critical time where we need to be talking, you know, so that you never have to go to a deep, dark place by yourself. I'm always going to stand back to back with you. We're going to take them down however we need to take them down, but you are never alone in this process. You are an underdog. That's what we do. We overcome shit like this. You know what I'm saying? And so It was important for me to get him back right mentally, because at the end of the day, he was questioning whether he still wanted the ball, and you know, I think I need to start working on the next transition. And I'm like, yeah, we should always be working on the next transition, because we don't know when the football part will end, you know. So let's start making headway into doing just that. Made a couple of phone calls. Boom, boom, boom. Where you gonna be? In Atlanta? You know what? I'm gonna call Slade. Okay. Boom. I run into the director of diversity at a school where Slade worked. Boom, UVA alum. Hey, Joanne, I need you to, my dude's in Atlanta. You're going to love this guy. I
want him
to come over to the school, meet you, and then you form an opinion. He goes over to the school and absolutely blows these people away. They are like, oh, my God, where you been all our lives? But I knew that. She called me and was just like, Tony, he everything and more that you said he was. I mean, she's like a big sister to him now. He's like, when you come to Atlanta, you make sure you call me. And the people at the school, they're like, look, we're going to support you. You do the CFL thing. But when you ready to come on here, we got a spot for you. Because you too important. And you're the example of what we need our kids to see. You know? And so that's all we want. You know, so now he got a network and he got some resources that he know he can fall back on when he's ready. You know what I'm saying? And so I think that's the elevation of what we want all our dudes to be thinking like, man. And we want to try to do it before they get into a situation where they're feeling desperate and depressed. You know, don't go to the dark place. Let's go ahead and put the plan in place a little bit earlier, because a lot of it is me telling you, like, guys, let's be thinking about what else we gonna do. But they get into that mentality. I hear you, but yo, I'm gonna do this, not realizing that I know the ugly part of the game, and it ain't always fair. So I want you to be prepared. I don't want you to be out there ill prepared for what you're going to face when this shit ends. And so, you know, but it takes a humility for them to understand that piece too, because they've been at the top. You know, they came out of high school highly recruited. They had success in college. They, you know, so you automatically think you're gonna make it to the next level. Shit just don't work like that, you know. And I know it, and so I want to make sure that these dudes have a resource. The folks that I know, if I know them, then they gonna know them, you know, because it's me picking up a phone call. If I got to drive to them to be with them, to help design a plan, and that's what we gonna do. You know, shit, that's what we talk about, Hawk. You know that. You know, we want to make sure we set these guys up to be successful. And you and I, however we can help them,
that's a fact.
That's what we gonna do. That's what we gonna do.
Ladies and gentlemen, y'all give it up for Black Jesus. I'm calling Black J's because he cursed. So that's Black J in a nutshell, right there. Carry on, Cuff. Go ahead. Transition. But we gotta give you a round of applause. Everybody at home, clap. If you're in the gym, call. Those were facts right there. That was gospel. You know what I'm saying? We're gonna add that after Luke, right there in the book.
Oh Lord, there you go. So tell us about that first year in Hamilton.
Hamilton,
man, it was It was different, man.
Oh,
at first,
Canada.
Yeah, you in Canada, Hamilton, Canada. It's an interesting city, man. It's not far from Toronto, about 40-45 minutes.
It's far enough from the T dot because you don't want to be in the T dot. Well, my fault. Go ahead.
Don't want to. It's crazy out there. It's cool, but and then close to Niagara Falls too. But it's a blue collar steel city, kind of like a Pittsburgh feel. Like they got real tough nosed people, and they love their football. So the games every week sold out. They drunk going crazy rooting for their Ticats. That's what they do. They look forward to the game. So great fan base. The organization is really cool. Like they really looked after me. I had to, you know, I had some another humbling experience there. But it was fun, man. I had some of the most fun I ever had playing football. I had to adjust to the rules. You know, there's different rules in Canada.
Yeah.
You know, the D-lineman got to be the yard off the ball. There's only three downs. The field goal post is in the front of the end zone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, adjusting to the rules.
Field is big.
Nah,
it ain't that big? Ain't that much bigger?
Not really. Okay. Not compared to the NFL. NFL is the best of the best. Don't, you know.
No, I'm saying the actual size of the field.
The size of the field. Yeah. It's wider. The field's wider.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The D lineman got to be able to run because it's more of a perimeter game.
Mm-hmm.
More screen, quick throws. No power, like fullback power, none of that. It's more perimeter, more finesse game. So big boys got to be able to run. So like I said, different rules. So I had to adjust to that, and then also had to adjust to. I played the played ACC ball, and I played NFL, and then CFL. Like it's not as much glamour and money involved in it. So it's you're not getting paid the big bucks, but you're getting paid decent. So. Mm-hmm. Another adjustment. But I first came there and T Cove came, Black Jay came through for you.
There
boy,
you go, Black Jay.
I came in there, I had a great camp, man. I was, top of the production charts. I was doing great, but then I had to deal with some, a little bit of politics,
Politics. I don't know because you talk about politics. Can you explain to our listeners the one political side as far as imports and folks who are from
Canada? So in Canada, in the CFL, there are 46 people to a roster, in which 22 of those people or 24 of those people have to be Canadian. So they have to have more than half of the roster Canadian. And of those starting spots, so there's 12 starters on each side. Mm-hmm. They have to have a total of 8 Canadian starters out of 24 starters. So wow. I think so they have to have a certain amount of starters. And so that means Americans that are coming up to play there.
Mm-hmm.
If you aren't a skill, it's tougher for interior because, Canadians are bigger, they have more size. They don't have really much skill. Like American receivers, running backs, quarterbacks, are on a different level than Canadians. Canadian D linemen, O linemen are a bit closer to the Americans. So they look to start more linemen, Canadian linemen than Canadian skill. So basically I had to go through a little bit of politics with the ratio and trying to, prove that I'm, because if you're an American guy, you got to really be able to ball to start there or to get playing time. Cause you have to prove that you're not only better than the Canadians, but you're better than the other 23 Americans. So you have to contribute. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure that if they're going to start you or play you, you got to be a playmaker. So, I had to go through proving myself. They put me on practice squad, man. So I had to spend the first like 3-4 weeks on practice squad. And that first week, man, I called up T Cove, like, look, I don't know, man. I think this is it for me. Because they paying you like
at the ego.
They paying you $700 a week. Come on, I can make that at McDonald's. Like, I don't want to be up here playing football, putting, and y'all know how tough it is to grind.
And are you paying your living on your own? Because I know in the Arena League, they paid our living. So
they gave us housing. Yeah, they give you housing. Good. and that's it. And then the 700, but okay. for you to be putting your, you know, your body on the line and grinding and putting so much time as a professional top 1% athlete in the world, like you want to be compensated as such. So like to be making that, knowing I could be making more in the States, and then it's the Canadian dollar. Like it's 75 cents to the dollar. Talk so when I go back to the States, my dollar's less. So it was tough for me to accept that I was on the practice squad. But Cove talked to me, he was like, look, man, he's like, you better go out here and give it all you got. You only got a little bit, you know, a little bit of ball left in you, man. You can go out there and knock some heads, prove yourself. Like let them know every day that you the baddest motherfucker on the field. So that's what I did, man. Every practice I went out there, I was trying to get at least four or five sacks each practice. So like, just to let them know, like, hey, I need to be on the field. Like I'm making plays. And so I kept doing that. By like week four, I finally got my playing time, like blocked. I had to play special teams too on top of that. I ain't never played special teams my whole career, really, besides like field goal or, you know, something like that. I was playing kick return, kickoff, punt return.
Oh, you was catching punt? No, I'm just playing.
Big sexy back there catching punts.
No, I am a little athletic. Hey, give me the rock, coach.
hey, but see, you in Hamilton was David, and a lot of folks don't know, David Wofford, former Wahoo, that transferred to Hampton University, 757, Hampton High School. Was he there before you got to Hamilton, or did he come after you was already there?
He came like week one. He came like the first or second week, I think. He came pretty soon, early in the season, because he was in another team, and then he came right to us early in the season, and became the backup. And then who else is there? Actually, J.E. Jordan Ellis just
and Jordan would be there. Yeah, Jordan signed too.
We ain't having a season right now, but he currently on our roster. So if we do have
shout out
season,
to Jordan,
Ellis. Shout out to J.E. Dog, but.
David got that nice little quarterback sneak package that he always doing up there.
Dave had like eight touchdowns sneaking in that joint.
What fuck but, up, what you say?
Mike Moore up in the league eating, bro. Hey,
yeah,
Mike
I saw he was rushing. Up for the decade team or something like that,
Mike
bro.
Mike can rush. He be hitting outside spins, be hitting the side club. Like he nice. He nice. He found his niche. Like he
doing his thing. For sure.
But there's a couple of us out there. Who else out there? I can't think. But yeah, man. So it was a cool season. We went 14. No, how many wins do we have? We had like 16 wins or something like that.
Made it to the ship, right?
We made it to the ship and we blew it, man.
Yeah. I remember talking to Dave before that. Yeah.
We lost, man. We were supposed to win it, man. They just got us. But
who did y'all end up who did y'all play?
Winnipeg. They got this DN that's cold. He ended up like having like two strip sacks against us. Like he took the game over.
Wow. Did you play against Chris Carter's son?
His
team? Yeah.
He was in BC, but they weren't that good. But I've seen some highlights from him. He can ball a little bit.
Yeah.
Got some juice in him.
Johnny Football was up there too, right?
Montreal.
For a hot minute.
He was in Montreal.
He is trash can.
If he was a D lineman, he wouldn't even sniff the roster because there's more Canadians there. So he lucky at quarterback.
Exactly.
He was in Montreal. They weren't that great. I heard some stories from him too. Same old wherever you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even know that story, man, about the roster, bro. I'm glad you shared about how difficult at playing your position, because we're so naive to the American NFL versus CFL. And we always say, hey, just go over to the CFL and play. And then you see guys not make it. And they don't know about the import rules. And somebody like that's playing offensive defensive line that can be listening to this podcast is like, yo, you do know if you go over there, you are in the minority. Like you really got to work extra hard.
Nice. You can't.
Yeah. So salute to you, bro. Definitely salute to you.
Yeah.
No doubt. Good business. So tell us a little bit about what's going on with you now. You referenced that you're working with Lyman and just tell us what's going on with you now.
Yeah. So right
as you await the CFL call.
Yeah, man. So the CFL is we were supposed to start in May. The CFL season starts in May, but with all the corona, it's been getting pushed back month and month again. So I don't know how likely the season is. We'll see, but I've been kind of working on my, I got a little lineman training business. I'm working with all athletes now. I started off just working with linemen. Now I'm working with linebackers now, and you know, even baseball players. So like I've been just training athletes and kids of all ages, like, you know, 12 through college. So it's been picking up. I've been having fun doing it. It's hot out here. It gets 100 degrees out here. So you out there really working. So if he's out there training with me, they really want it. So
where are you now?
I'm in Virginia, 75 still. Yeah.
Okay.
So I've been doing that and just trying to prepare for not having a season. So if we don't have a season, I'm probably looking to do something full time. I would like to either work on a college campus, work in a high school. I'm even, you know, trying to have, you know, I'm looking into get my insurance license just so I can do something at home. Because I want to like
CPCUs.
Yeah, I'm trying to be prepared because I don't know if stuff is going to shut down again. I just want to have something where I can work from home and have some, you know, guaranteed full time income if we don't have a season.
Yeah.
So
So then we need to chop it up then.
Yes,
so well and you too, Ahmad, because you know folks down in the 757. Yeah. So we just need to holler at DD offline and make sure, you know, we got him set up to be successful. Because just like we did in Cincinnati, connect you with Joe Mallory, my guy up there, man. He loves you. You know,
front lines with it.
Yeah, it's opening work. Know, he's about that business, and bro, he loved you. He was just like, he was like, that dude was special. And so, you know, it's really about making sure and exhausting our connections, because, you know, dude, you got a master's in higher education and sports administration. You know, you told me that you want to eventually be in athletic administration at some point, in some way, shape, or form. And so, you know, what I want us to do is to work towards that end. You know what I'm saying? And just making the connections. I love the fact that you developed your own business model. Want to make sure we got that set up correct, that, you know, so that you connected, all that stuff. So we just need to have a powwow here in short order to make sure you all set up with that. So me, you, and Halt, we need to set up a call at some point, you know, 5 to 7 days to just to make sure we got you all set up. All
right?
Me and Dave talked one time on Instagram message, and I don't know if Dave remember this, but I told him, once you show football doesn't have dominion over you, it becomes easy.
Yeah.
Football became easy for me once I got in the Arena Football League, when I learned how to become an entrepreneur and I wanted to know what I wanted to do next. And I was lucky enough that I went through that dark place like he went through, to where I didn't have anything. And I had to start thinking outside of football, that when in return, it didn't hold dominion over me anymore. And I think a lot of athletes, even when they're in high school and they get to college and they get these degrees, understanding how to utilize the degrees, because football puts us behind as far as workforce experience.
Yeah.
So even when you're playing, you got to also stay tapped to the streets of the workforce, because you just don't know when football is not going to truly love you anymore. Just dumps you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You become a side chick. You're not exclusive no more.
Yeah, I remember that talk, because we were talking about how players weren't, you know, living year to year off their paychecks, like not saving anything. And, you know, that's definitely, you know, I learned from that, like that my first year in NFL, unfortunately, I had the surgeries and all that. But after that, like I put everything away. Like if I don't have to touch it, I don't touch it, bro.
There you go.
Like, I had to really I think working after, you know, the NFL kind of taught me the you know, hourly dollar, like what it's really like from the dollar by the hour and not by a game or by practice or by week. Like, so, you know, really taught me how to, you know, save. Now I'm just trying to get into the investing part. That's where I'm trying to learn how to, you know, learning about, you know, real estate and, you know, trying to get my first home and you know, just moving on to that part of my life now. So I'm learning, man. I'm fortunate to have people like you in my life, you and Hawk in my life, to to teach me the ropes, man. And I'm just going to keep taking this knowledge and applying it to life, man. I'm really fortunate to have y'all, man.
I'm just a disciple of Black Jay, man. That's it. You know what I'm saying? Go to the Book of Acts. You see me performing, you know, miracles without Black Jay. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just a living testament, man. Book of Acts is one of my favorite books in the Bible because it showed the disciples were performing miracles and, you know, they realized the importance of their belief. And that's it, man. That's
no doubt, no doubt. Y'all both.
He's so uncomfortable with this too, Dave. He's so uncomfortable.
Y'all super silly. Y'all super silly. So yo, let's wrap real quick. Have either of you seen the UVA schedule that's proposed? This 10+1. Have either one of you checked it out yet?
What's up with Notre? What they doing with Notre Dame?
Hey, don't do it, David. You gonna this gonna get a lot of traffic. Go ahead and say the name you was gonna say.
Say it again.
Say the team.
Say it again.
Notre Dame, man. What's up with that?
Bruh, that's crazy. That they allowing them to play for the ACC championship and they not a full member. It's all about that dollar. That's
they get what's their TV contract like? $15 million or something with NBC that they letting us get a piece of it.
The ACC said what?
I heard they had to share that money.
Yeah.
They lift that hood up on that engine like, oh, you got that? Oh, yeah, let me get that.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, y'all can ride with us.
We ain't going to stay. I don't care. Let me get that because it's COVID. Let me get all that.
Yeah. I need all that.
So, you know, so yeah, bro, that just – and then so I'm looking at the schedule for us. Boston College, the home schedule, Boston College, mm-hmm. Duke, Louisville, UNC, NC State. Then the away games, Clemson. At Clemson, at Florida State, at Miami, at Virginia Tech, at Wake Forest. Look,
Miami
at first when I saw
Florida State.
Yeah, when I looked, I said this is brutal. Then I thought though, you know what? Ain't no fans gonna be.
There's no fans. There's no home field advantage anymore. Exactly. Like no fans gonna be playing. Wait.
No tomahawk chopping, huh?
Madden, right. 2021 sounds or something.
You know what I'm saying?
You got to pipe in fans and whatnot. Mm. But still, you know, man. What do you think about that?
Florida State and Miami in the same year. Was that the same year we closed down the Orange Bowl? Where we actually beat them both on the road?
I think so.
London's year.
That was London year. Yeah, is that the last time we went? We played both of them on the road in the same year.
I think so.
I'm going with that because it was a great memory. Yeah. I'm going with.
Yeah, let's rock with that. Let's rock with that. Well, how do you feel about the Notre Dame joint?
I don't think that's right at all for them to just go against tradition one and then just to let them jump in like randomly like this
playing double dutch.
That's real shady business right there to me.
Yeah, fact.
That ain't cool. But
then when you look at their ACC slate, they play Clemson, Florida State, Louisville at home, and then on the road their toughest road game is Carolina. Well, Pitt could be a problem because that front seven, that defensive line, Pitt.
Paris Ford back.
Is a problem. And Paris Ford out there, he putting heads to bed. Mm-hmm. For real. You got to protect your neck. You got to protect your neck with that young man roaming in the secondary.
Yeah, he real.
But so, about,
you know, I think they join this week.
What about how Louisville looking this year?
They going to be all right.
They're going to be a problem.
Good. They tail back nice. And then they got Tutu.
Quarterback.
Tutu Atwell's a beast. He was on QB 11. If anybody want to go look at QB 11, look at Tutu Atwell playing quarterback in high school.
But man, they're going to be a problem, D. For real.
It's a tough away schedule. I think home we can handle our business, but
yeah.
I mean, Clemson, yeah, okay. But Florida State, I ain't giving them nothing yet. They ain't earned nothing for me.
No, because it's not the Florida State of old.
Nah.
I think Miami will be improved with the De'Aaron King, that quarterback, because they really been missing that link. But you know, with Miami, you know,
from we own Miami though. We run them. That's us. Yeah,
it's the coaching at Miami that's killing them. For real. I just gotta call it like just coaching.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, hey, if that makes me a bad person, I'll be that.
We're going to get them 6 wins for sure. It's just how great can we be? I think we're going to get 6 wins. We're going to win the games that we're supposed to win. It's just how great the boys want to be for real.
Yeah. Well, because look, 8 returning starters. Yeah. The way. Could you imagine playing in this system?
Man, bro. They be having fun. I love to watch the defense play. They be having fun, bro. They be having fun.
Hey, tell me Mandy and them don't remind you of you because they built and they athletic just like you are.
That's what's so crazy. They remind me of you. Hey, he got a mean little swipe move. I be hitting some. Hey, he can get jiggy on there. Who else, coach? Snowden. Snowden is a different athlete. Bro. For him to be that tall, but be that physical and have some finesse, oh, man. Yeah. He might be a problem.
The sneaky one is Noah Taylor, though.
I know. He just came on the scene.
He's a problem. See,
the thing about Noah is he was doing everything and wasn't getting the eyeballs.
Yeah.
But once the injuries came about and he had to start moving around, because people don't realize how big he is, too, and how long his arms is.
At 6'5".
What he did versus Virginia Tech, he going to be – what the game he had versus Virginia Tech makes him a legend. Because he single-handedly – he set the tone with the sack, and then he ended the game with the pick. I know we talk about the fumble in the end zone. That's fine. But that pick he had on a sail route, playing backer? Come on, son.
Yes, playing backer.
Noah, nice. Bruh.
Disruptive. That whole defense is just disruptive. And
then we got Zane in the middle.
They feeling real disrespected now because we had Snowden on the show, David. And he was so as we were about to roll into that segment,
into your
we
segment, told you about, yep.
He was just like, how we said, we're the Coastal Champions, right? We were like, yeah. He said, how in the hell are they going to rank us damn near last? Like 1% chance of winning it again this year with 8 returning starters on defense.
Wow.
So he was real salty about that.
Yeah. Him was mad.
Yeah. Big
Who's the quarterback
big
that got stepping up this year?
Brendan Armstrong. And then we got a transfer, another Ferrari. Remember when Phillip Sims came and people get enamored and they forget about who already here? Like, Brendan is that, guy, bro.
Brendan Cole.
Keenan.
But, I mean, don't get me wrong. I welcome Keenan. He has that dynamic ability that can allow Armstead to redshirt because I think he's going to be good. He's definitely going to fit what we do on offense. But you just can't overlook Brendan, bro.
No.
I'm telling you.
He got that
dog. And I ain't just saying that because he here. You know me. You know me, Dave. I'll tell you if somebody trash can juice.
Bring up. Trash can juice.
Yeah, for real.
Trash can juice.
He could. Hey, his deep ball. Let's get it.
Sling it. Okay.
He'll run that ass over too. He like.
Yeah, he don't do too much maneuvering. No. He just gonna run through you.
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
No maneuver.
No. Bro, like I said, anytime he came in the game, bro, it was straight production. We like, damn. Because Bryce go down, we like, goals. Oh, damn. We like.
Yeah, dog. Every time Bryce went down and was like, oh, what the hell are we going to do? Like Louisville his freshman year. Do you look at Georgia Tech down there? Yep. He had a drive through, short pass to Joe Reed, but still he got us out of the rut. Then all our fake field goals and stuff thrown into Snowden or versus North Carolina. Like he was coming in on like make or break plays, making plays.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like he legit, bro. Like I like
the moment wasn't too big.
And I know he got a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. Yep.
Okay.
Straight gunslinger.
I like that.
Straight gunslinger. So
I like that.
I'm like, all right, y'all gonna sleep on us if y'all want.
And it ain't pretty too. That's what I like about it. It don't look good when you throw it like Phillip Rivers. It don't look good. It just get there.
It just get there. Facts. So cool. So we're gonna roll into the final segment of the show. What we like to call Shut the Hell Up, I'm Underdog. Dave, we already told you what that's about. Something that pisses you off, but you're gonna overcome it anyway.
Yeah.
Man, since we've been talking about it a lot, the politics of the game, man, that's what pisses me off. You know, like I said, football ain't really football after once you get to college. It's business and politics, man. So that pisses me off, and I just want to encourage everybody, us athletes to like Hawk said, not really depend on football, but kind of like, use it as a means to something else or like another career or another path and use it to help us, be successful in other areas of life so we don't have to depend on it. So I'm gonna just, use this conversation and use this advice to help it drive me. And I just hope you have today inspired somebody else too. So that's what that's the business and politics pisses me off. And I want us to fight through that, man.
Gonna overcome it any damn way.
Yes, sir.
God damn it. And then we're gonna serve you some of this good old drink. Cause everybody like to drink something. So you know what I'm saying? When you're drinking something, you can't say nothing back. You know what I'm saying? That's why I serve juice. Cause when you're drinking, you can't talk. You gotta listen.
No doubt, no doubt. Well, David, thank you, brother, for joining us today, man. We really enjoyed this. Yeah, you know, we're gonna continue to follow you, man. Wishing you much success. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing the damn thing, bro, we're gonna get you back on this show so that we can get a report out. We always gonna follow you. So we
so, you know,
it's done and done.
Yep,
so
yep.
We appreciate your time, man, and look forward to having you again. And for T Cuff and Ball Hawk.
Oh, his new nickname is Black Jay, baby.
Thank you all for listening, and we are out on the lockdown.